Welcome, everyone, to this WebSphere Support Technical Exchange Ask the Expert session. Today's topic is NQ clustering gotchas, avoiding cluster administration errors. My name is David Long, and this session will give you the opportunity to speak to our panel of experts on a variety of subjects related to today's topic. Moving on to slide number two, the agenda. In today's session, we will start off by introducing our panel of experts to you. We will then move on to give you a brief introduction to today's topic. Next, our panel of experts will answer the questions that they provided. Then we will open the lines for live question and answer period. Finally, the session will end with a summary of today's session. Moving on to slide number three. At this time, I would like our panel of experts to introduce themselves for today's call. First, we have Andy Emmett. Please go ahead, Andy.
Thank you, David. Hello, everybody. My name is Andy Emmett. I've been working with IBM and the Level 3 support organization for many years, and I've been specializing in the area of clustering for much of that time. And hopefully I'll be here to help answer some of the questions you have during the question and answer session. Otherwise, my colleagues in Level 2 will be taking you through some of these gotchas, so maybe I can hand you on to the next person, Jana.
Hello, this is Jana Johnson, and I have been with MQ Level 2 support since 2002, and in my work I handle quite a few clustering PMRs, so I'll be happy to help you guys today.
Hi, okay, and this is Valerie Lampkin. I am currently with the WebSphere MQ Distributed Level 2 support as well. I've been with IBM supporting WebSphere MQ for over 14 years now, and previously I was with Global Services, so I've had quite a lot of experience with different customers and their clustering topology. And the next person is Bill.
This is Bill Moss. I'm also with MQ Level 2 support. I've been working with MQ Series for about 18 years now, and in this group for a little over 10, and worked on a number of clustering issues, as well as the others. And next is Miguel.
Yes. Excuse me. Hello, everyone. My name is Miguel, and I've been working with WebSphere MQ support for 10 years now, and I specialize in clustering and SSL-related problems. Good.
Thank you, Miguel. Before we get to the question and answer period, our panel would like to give you a technical overview of the topic. Moving on to slide number four, please go ahead, Miguel.
IBM introduced MQ clustering at version 5.1 of the MQ product. Since then, our customers have been adopting the clustering method of messaging over point to point due to its ease of administration and workload balancing features. However, as with any method of messaging, there are certain rules that apply for configuration and administration, which if not properly implemented, can negatively impact the communication in the MQ cluster and cause outages. The intention of this presentation is to point out the most common MQ clustering administration mistakes we have encountered throughout the years. As such, our goal is not only to discuss the MQ clustering mistakes, but to reveal the unintended consequences of these mistakes and how to resolve them. We will be providing additional critical information for your awareness and implementation to keep your MQ cluster healthy. And lastly, we'll provide a Q&A session to allow you the opportunity to ask questions related to clustering. At this point, I would like to turn over the presentation to Jana for our first topic of discussion.
All right, then we have now slide number five now. All right, and our first question is going to talk about the improper use of removing the cluster key manager from the existing cluster. So let's go ahead and go to slide number six and get started. All right, so we see quite in a few cases where the key managers are not being properly removed from the cluster that you have that would be causing various cluster issues down the road. So the activities that we're seeing that are being done is deleting the cluster channels without taking them out of the cluster first, redefining the same key manager in the cluster without taking the original key manager out of the cluster first. Also, stopping and deleting a key manager without taking it out of the cluster first. And also, in some cases, we're seeing where people are issuing the refresh clusters on a full repository. All of these activities lead the key manager's data to not be removed from the cluster cache, and appropriate messages are not being broadcast to all the cluster members, so that other members in the cluster are not aware that a particular queue manager is no longer a member. So all of this leads to the following issues that we're seeing. More than one entry to the same queue manager in the cluster cache for the same queue manager. You would see 2189 errors, the cluster resolution errors. You would see 2085, which is unknown object name when you're trying to put to a queue, for example. Mostly on the full repository queue manager, you would see errors like MQ9456 and 9469, which pretty much tell you that the messages were not received in the queue manager error logs, that updates were not received for the cluster objects. So all these errors are likely once the current cluster object subscriptions expire and are not being renewed, because the queue manager is no longer there, so it's not able to renew them. So let's move on to slide number 7. All right, so this slide describes on how to properly remove the queue manager from a cluster. And it is essential that these steps are performed, because this allows a queue manager that is trying to leave the cluster to let other clustered queue managers know that is no longer available as a member of this particular cluster. That way, other cluster key managers will not try to send the data to it, as well as partial and the full repository cache will also be properly updated. So you would begin by taking your cluster channels out of a cluster. And I want you to notice that you should take the cluster receiver out of the cluster first. What it's going to do is going to let the other cluster queue managers to no longer pick this queue manager as a possible destination. After that, you can take the cluster sender channel out. So, and in the commands that you're seeing on the slide, we're blanking out the cluster name. After that, you need to stop and delete your cluster channels. Cluster retains knowledge about a removed queue manager in the cluster cache for 90 days in case there is a need for a removed queue manager to rejoin the cluster. So if you look at a cluster dump via the AMQ RFDM output, you will still see information about the queue manager that you have taken out of the cluster. However, it will not be there for that forever. After 90 days, that information will be discarded. Now, if you need to completely discard all knowledge about the queue manager from the cluster, this is when you can use the reset cluster command, which we'll be discussing shortly in more detail. So let's move on to slide number 8. And in this particular slide, I just wanted to add more info in case you need to remove a full repository key manager from the cluster. And the key point here is that before you do anything, you need to demote this key manager to be a partial repository in the cluster. And you can do that by altering the key manager's repos attributes to blanks. So then at that point, you can follow the instructions that you saw in the previous slide and manually remove cluster and cluster sender and the cluster receiver channels from a cluster, and you can stop and delete those channels, and you would be good to go. So let's move on to slide number 9. And the next stop is improper use of refresh cluster and reset cluster commands on a day-to-day cluster maintenance. So let's move on to slide number 10 to address this point. So another issue we're seeing is that refresh cluster and reset cluster commands are not always used as intended. So let's first go over the refresh cluster command. So I have to note that the refresh cluster command is being issued very often in hopes of fixing various cluster issues without properly doing the root cause first. Since using the refresh cluster wipes out the cluster cache on a cluster key manager when it is used, we have to be careful when we are deciding to actually use this command. The command is not intended to be a fix-all for all cluster issues. It's always a best way to contact level 2 or level 3 support for guidance on whether or not to use this command so that we have a chance to look into the root cause of the issue and then tell you guys whether this is the best way to go. Usually this command would be used when you're trying to rejoin a key manager back into the cluster or when you're trying to clean up the current cluster cache on a partial repository and acquire the latest cluster information from the full. And in some cases, there is a refresh cluster that would be required on a full repository, but this is something that's not done very often at all. But I just want to put it out there for you, just an FYI, one of the things that can be done. Let's move to slide number 11. All right, so let's go over the refresh cluster commands and various options that the command offers. So the refresh cluster with the repos flag null is a default behavior where the knowledge of all locally defined cluster key managers and cluster queues and all the full repositories cluster key managers is retained. The full repository for the cluster retains knowledge of the other cluster key managers. If you are using a refresh cluster with repos flag yes, then objects that represent the full repository across cluster key managers as well as the partial are refreshed. Note that this command is not valid on a full repository key manager. If you're doing a refresh cluster on a full repository key manager, you would issue it with a repos flag no. And the last option is a refresh cluster star. What it's going to do, it is it's going to refresh the key manager in all the clusters that it is a member of. If you're using this command, you need to be aware that when the issue, when you issue a refresh cluster star command, it may take a while to complete, depending on the size of the cluster, and also can be resource intensive. And again, I would advise to seek IBM level 2 support guidance, level 3 support guidance prior to running this command. So let's move on to slide number 12 and address the reset cluster. The main point that I would like to make here is that we have seen cases where customers try to issue a reset cluster command on a partial repository. The reset cluster can be used only on the full repository key manager, and usually it would be used in exceptional circumstances when information about a cluster key manager has to be removed. Also, the reset cluster is the only way to remove the outer defined cluster sender channels. So if you need to completely get rid of the key manager's information in your cluster, this is the command that you would want to use. If the key manager is still there, you need to follow the normal steps of removing the key manager from the cluster, and then use a reset cluster after that, and instead of waiting for a cluster for 90 days to remove the info from the cache, this command will do it right away. If the key manager is no longer in existence, but information about this key manager is still in the cluster cache, you will just need to issue a reset cluster command, and all the information about that key manager will be gone from the cluster. Now, there are a couple of ways to issue a reset cluster command. You can specify reset cluster with QM name, and then specify the actual key manager name, the information for which you would like to remove from the cluster, or you can specify the QM ID for the key manager and remove all the data from the cluster that would contain this QM ID. Usually, the QM ID option is used whenever you end up with a duplicate queue managers within the cluster and you're looking to remove the older queue manager instance. And as always, if you're not sure on what to do or how to proceed while attempting to solve your issue with clustering, always feel free to get in touch with MQ Level 2 support, and we'll be more than happy to help you out. And at this point, I would like to turn to slide number 13, which would be a question number 3, and I'm going to turn over to Bill.
Hello, it's Bill Moss. Yeah, we're going to be going over problems with ignoring cluster-related messages in the queue manager error logs. So if we can move to slide 14. ignoring cluster-related messages in queue manager error logs. Basically, as you see on the next line, queue manager error log errors and warnings need that if unheeded have a negative impact on cluster. A major one is that the repository manager ended abnormally. When a repository manager is reported, that's for the local queue manager, and without it running, and its process name is EMQRRMFA, without that, you're not going to get updates for the pool repository, and any changes to local cluster queues are not being published, so a pool repository and other queue managers won't know about it. Applications connecting to the queue manager will be able to continue to operate normally, but only up to 90 days, at which point the entries in the local repository will time out and no longer be used. So after 90 days, you may be surprised when, and of course, that error message won't be in your logs since they wrap around. Page 15, please. Two more messages that are reasonably the same. No repositories in the cluster or only one. These error messages can come up when you're performing maintenance on the cluster. But if you're not performing them, or they show up after you've completed your work, you'll need to investigate the reason for this. MQ clusters are designed to have two full repository managers to ensure that one will always be available, whether one's being taken out for maintenance or a system goes down. If you check and find two or four repositories are defined, then you need to verify the manually defined cluster center channel of the key manager in question is pointing to a full repository and it can connect to the full repository successfully. Page 16, please. Next one is the inconsistency of the definition of a queue. This can be something as simple as a description, but what we commonly find is that the binds entry is different in one versus another, and that's the bind default. So if the option, as you see there on the screen, is being used by the application to open a queue, if it connects to one versus the other, the actions will be taken are different, either bouncing between the queues or sticking with one. So you may not get workload balancing as you expect. Sometimes this error message can be the result of object changes that are delayed in being broadcast across the cluster. If you see that the queues are consistent, then check the channels coming from the full repository, make sure that they can run successfully. I think that's the last screen for on this question. If we can go up page 17. Yes.
Okay, and this is Valerie. I'm going to be doing question number 4, which is discussing improperly using MQ clustering feature for high availability or disaster recovery purposes. Clustering does offer increased availability and workload balance. Basically, it improves scalability because the number of instances of a queue you can define can provide greater availability. But this is not to be confused with high availability or DR. If you're looking for that type of option, you may want to consider multi-instance key managers. Clusters, as I said, allow scalability because you can have several instances of the same queue on more than one key manager and distribute the workload. But please be aware that the workload distribution may not always be exactly even, which some customers expect it to be a 50-50 or, and if you have four, 25% going in a round-robin fashion. There is an internal clustering algorithm that considers many factors when it decides where to route messages, so you may not always see an even distribution. Now, if a message batch is sent to a particular queue manager in the cluster and that queue manager becomes unavailable, if it's deleted, et cetera, then normally the message would be backed out and a workload management routine would attempt to select an alternative destination. However, if the message is in doubt or has no suitable alternative, such as I mentioned when the if a queue or queue manager has been deleted and was not properly removed, then that message may be stranded on a cluster transmit queue. Let's go on to the next slide, number 18. Okay. Clustering does offer increased availability and workload. The cluster repositories keep an up-to-date information about the cluster. It's not available. It's not advisable to introduce a disaster recovery queue manager into the cluster, as the repositories may then consider this to be a viable candidate for sending messages. Also, it will try to send the cluster admin messages. So even when you suspend it, you may get messages trying to go to that. So, and as mentioned before, if an update is not received for 90 days, then it would be removed from the cluster cache. So normally it's recommended to keep your DR disaster recovery site separate, and clustering really wasn't designed for that. It was more for a scalability and to have several instances of a application processing from similar queues. The stranded messages do rarely happen, but we do have a tech note with steps for removing messages that are left behind. And I've provided that here should you need it. Let's go to the next slide, which would be number 19. Okay, one thing to consider is that when you use clustering is message affinities. Because before you start to use clusters when you have just multiple definitions of the same queue, you should examine your applications to see if there are any that have message affinities, such as if they need to have messages going to a particular destination and coming back to the same, or if they need to be processed in a particular order. Because clustering cannot guarantee that, there are ways to handle message affinities, which I've listed here. You can name the specific destination on the open call. You can put the return queue manager name in the reply to queue manager field. You can use the bind on open option when you do the open call. Also, in version 7.1, there was a bind on group that was allowed. This will allow you to specify that all messages in the message groups are put to a queue using the MQ put. So you have the several different options there. You can use the normally, if you're trying to do the round robin and you do the open, you would do a bind not fixed. But you could do the bind on open. You could do a bind on group. And I think mentioned before, you can take the queue default. Normally, I would not advise to take a queue default because then if the queues are not defined as they should be, you might get unexpected results. So it's always a good idea to specify that in the application, I believe. And then there's also you can use a cluster workload exit. I've also noted here that the use of segmented messages can cause an affinity problem that you because they would need to be, the segments would need to be put back together at one destination and not routed across the cluster to different queues. Let's go to the next slide, number 20. And this is question number 5, I believe. That's Miguel.
Yes, Valerie. Thank you very much. Improperly configuring MQ cluster channels and repositories. Next slide, please. Page 21. Okay, so the administrative error or mistake is configuring a manually defined cluster center channel to a partial repository. This is something that we found that our customers do when they see that for whatever reason one partial repository is not able to communicate with another, so they just figure, well, they're thinking along the lines of point-to-point, I'll just create another mailing defined cluster center channel to a partial repository, if you will. The problem is that full repositories are the ones that contain all the information concerning the cluster. If a partial repository is not receiving cluster updates regularly from a full repository and vice versa, the cluster information for this partial repository will be incomplete, which could lead to cluster resolution errors. Not only that, but in addition, if there's no proper communication between a partial repository and its full repository for a long period of time, let's say 90 days, there's a probability that the partial repository will actually be removed from the cluster due to the inactivity. So what do you do in a situation like this? Please, please, please do not create manually defined cluster sender channels to partial repositories. That causes all kinds of problems, some of which we've just spoken about. So to resolve this issue, just delete the manually defined cluster sender channel pointing to a partial repository. Once you do that, redefine a new cluster sender to a full repository. When you do that, at that point, please issue from the partial repository, issue a refresh cluster name repos yes command to reintroduce this partial repository into the cluster. And this way, the proper information will be in the cluster cache for this partial repository, and you will avoid problems. Next slide, please, number 22. Thank you. Continuing on, something else that our customers do is that they create more than two full repositories in their cluster. A cluster does not need more than two full repositories. An MQ cluster is designed to have two full repositories. And some of our customers feel that if they create more and more full repositories, then they'll have all the repository information between each other and things will work out best that way. Not really, because it wasn't designed for really more than two full repositories to have the full repository information. Creating multiple full repositories will cause cluster-related admin messages overhead as full repositories are in constant communication with each other and the partial repositories accordingly. As such, there's going to be unnecessary network broadcasts between these full repositories. This is not something that you want in your network. especially if you have a large cluster. And in that case, you'll have a lot of information going back and forth. Like I said, that's just not a good idea. So what do you do to resolve this problem? Well, first of all, you need to choose out of your multiple full repositories, please choose two full repositories. Once you've chosen those two full repositories, please make sure that the partial repositories that you have in this cluster have a manually defined cluster sender channel to one of these chosen full repositories. They don't need to have a manually defined cluster sender channel to both of them. One is sufficient. Also, of course, make sure that these two full repositories have a manually defined cluster sender channel to each other. And then the last part that you need to do is to demote the other four repositories, the ones that were not chosen, to a partial repository. At this point, slide 23, please. Okay. Now I'd like to turn this presentation over to Valerie for some additional, very important information. Valerie?
Yes, hi. Okay, this is not really, wasn't really a question, but it is, can be considered a gotcha because we have a hyper APAR here, number IV25030, for which we've had numerous PMRs and we've had customers that have had some severe impacts, so we thought it would be a really good idea and to bring it up in this forum, since all of you are obviously interested in clustering and probably deal with that. This is the IV25030 is APAR for WebSphere MQ cluster failing, possibly generating FDC files with probe ID RM296000, or it may have a repository error reported. All users of WebSphere MQ clusters are potentially affected by this. I have the platforms listed here, Windows and all the Unix, Linux platforms, and I've also provided the link to the web page for you to look further. Let's go to the next slide, number 24. This is called a hyper APAR because it is high impact and a pervasive issue. We strongly recommend that you apply the fix to all the key managers in your cluster. The fix is available in the following fix packs, so it should be available for a fix pack download for any of the supported MQ versions at this point. With the symptoms, the MQ cluster may stop working. FDCs may include the repository area or the probe ID, and the repository process, the AMQRR MFA, may end abruptly. One symptom that you often see is that the cluster display will have a corrupted, mangled-looking output here rather than showing the correct cluster name. Because this affects only the cluster repository cache, the message data is unlikely to be lost, but the corrupt records may lead to the MQ API calls failing. For example, with the cluster resolution error, messages may go to the dead letter queue, or the channels may have to stop processing when a message cannot be correctly routed. Let's go to the next slide, number 25. Once the fix is applied, you should clean any corrupt cluster cache with the refresh command. And you're going to use the refresh cluster with the asterisk and the repause yes flag. So that means it's going to clear all the clusters. And as stated before, you can't do the repause yes on a full repository. So this may require that your full repositories be demoted one at a time for the period while you issue the command. And then you can do that with altering just the repause attribute, make it a partial, issue the command. Once the command has been propagated, then you would alter it to make it a full repository again. You may also see the cluster corruption that I showed in the previous slide where, on some ZOS, which may look similar to this, but it really is a different APAR, so I've provided that as well so that if you see the same symptoms, you can look at the ZOS APAR for that platform. And then we will go to the next slide, number 26. And I think it goes back to you, Zabin.
Yes. I'd like to thank our panel of experts for answering the pre-submitted questions. At this time, we would like to open the lines for a live question and answer period.
Our first question is from Tim McDonough. Your line is open.
I was just wondering if you've had any reported issues with multi-instance queue managers in clustering, and if there's any special steps that should be taken when joining a multi-instance queue manager to a cluster.
Hi, this is Andy. Not particularly aware of any particular problems with multi-instance queue managers and clustering. have you experienced something that you know we could answer?
I don't have anything directly proving it's caused by multi-instance, but on a couple of cases when a queue manager has switched over to another server, I have a channel that gets stuck in initializing, and it won't. I can't get it to restart without actually having to delete the channel and recreate it with a different name.
Okay.
I've got several things to fix it, but
right.
I just didn't know if it was caused by multi-instance or not.
It'll probably it is hard to tell why the channel would be in the initializing state. Just right off the top of my head, I wouldn't necessarily expect that that would be due to the fact that the key manager is a multi-instance key manager. But I have done a WSTI going back to your question. That I can post in the chat here about the considerations that should be taken when you're joining a multi-instance queue manager into the cluster. And I can go ahead and do a paste real quick so that you can take note. And
I haven't been able to get into the meeting, so I don't actually have access to the chat. So I don't know.
Oh, okay. Would you be able to drop me a note, and I can just send a link to you?
Yeah, that'd be great.
Okay. David, we have all our emails in the WSTI Tech note out there.
On the slide coming up, there's going to be an email address. It's wsehelp@us.ibm.com that
great.
You can send questions to, and I can forward to you.
Okay, sounds great.
Okay, that would be great. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
And with the creation of dedicated channels, should we be using the connection list for the servers in for the multi-instance, or should we be using an F5?
Connection list should work fine. You know, you just put them through the comma.
Okay.
In the con name, yep.
Our next question is from Donna Welshans. Your line is open.
Yes, I have a couple questions. First question is pertaining to slide number 17, when it talks about workload balancing. There is a statement that it's not going to be an even split. For example, if you have four queue managers in the cluster, you're not going to get 25% across the board. I understand that, but if you have one that's taking 70 and the other taking 10 and you wanted to troubleshoot, what are some of the methods that it considers when it decides where to route the messages that we can troubleshoot? And I don't feel like we got any hints here on where to find where our problem could be if we're not seeing us.
Yeah, I think you may have to capture a trace to see. Well, I can also, are you in the chat? There, I can post that. Are you familiar with the algorithm that is used internally by the cluster? To determine, like, where it keeps the destination sequence factor, et cetera?
Yeah, some of it, but I'm not in the chat, but I'll...
Okay. I can... There is... It's in the info center, actually, under the clustering, but I can paste it or get that information for you. But as far as if you are having an unexpected balance and it's not something that you can easily determine as you go through the steps in the algorithm... And really, tracing is the only way for us to determine how the MQ clustering feature is deciding where to route it to.
Okay.
For example, you know, when you have one example might be if you have one of the queues that is or one of the queue managers that's being used by other applications as well, then it may have a heavier load. But also, those internal sequence factors get reset sometimes when you recycle, and it might be something like that.
Okay. All right. Thank you. And then my other question is pertaining to the hyper and the comment on slide 24 where it's talking about your full repositories, or I think it's...
Yeah, about having to refresh them or demote them?
Yeah, to demote them. How would you know, like, would you only demote your folds to do the refresh if you're seeing this corruption, or if you're just being proactive and applying the APAR, are you recommending to demote?
I'm going to ask Andy to answer that, because I think I've been told that you don't have to issue it unless that you see the corruption, but I'd like for him to, I know we've had some new updates since then, just to make sure that's still the recommendation.
Yes, sure, Valerie. Right. Normally, we would look to get some information if a customer believes that something strange is occurring in their soil repositories. We'd normally ask you to send us a dump so that we can have a check whether there is corruption or not. If we do find that there is corruption in the soil repositories, then part of the procedure to clean up, now this is even if you have already applied the APAR by using one of the fix packs or an interim fix at the levels that you're running, we would ask you to perform some cleanup steps to make sure that we've removed corruption from the configuration information, and then subsequently to that, we would then ask you to perform the refresh cluster stars on the partial repositories throughout the cluster configuration. So, you know, ideally we want all four repositories to be at a good state before you continue and you know, put everything back to normal. Hopefully that answers the question. But you know, the safest way might be to raise a PMR with us.
Okay, and then you know, if you have thousands of queue managers out there and you're applying the APAR, we could just apply the APAR without doing the refresh unless we saw the corruption. Is that correct? Or are we supposed to, after we apply the APAR, are we supposed to automatically do a refresh on the partials?
Well, continuing on from what I was just talking about, you know, we do need to make sure in that situation that you have cleaned up the full repositories if necessary. At that point, you know, it would be our recommendation if you're partial repositories are considerably back level, that you try and plan to perform these refreshes. But yes, to answer your question, you know, you can go ahead and issue refresh clusters on the partial repositories that you might be seeing problems with, but we would strongly recommend that you put in place a plan to try and clean those up.
Thank you.
Okay. There are some other considerations as well. So some customers do have the ability to sort of go and ask many queue managers to sort of perform a refresh cluster at the same time. We do, you know, we would prefer it if customers could actually batch up the queue managers to which they're going to issue the refresh clusters, so that not everything sort of times out at the same time period. There's a cycle of 27 days that occurs within the repository manager processes, and we wouldn't want your full repositories to be inundated with configuration changes. So if you've got lots of queue managers to clean up, then it's advised that, you know, you do them in small batches per any given hour, let's say. Hopefully that helps.
Yes, thank you, Andy.
Our next question is from Derek Hornby. Your line is open.
Yeah, hi. Recently, all my servers moved data centers. Before they did that, I shut down all my, you know, queue managers, including repositories and partial repositories and so on. However, when they came up in the new data center, everything had different IP addresses. So what I felt I had to do was remove all the objects from the cluster that had existed before the move, and then create two new repositories, and then add those objects to the new repositories. And that seemed to work fine. I just wondered two things. One, Explorer thinks there's something with the old repository hanging around, the old cluster, I should say, which I don't really care about, but I was curious. And the second part is, could I have done anything different or better than what I did?
Well, this is Andy. Tricky one to answer, perhaps. I'm not quite sure whether you meant that your full repositories didn't have their IP addresses changed or not.
Yeah, they did. Everything changed, and I had all the definitions using IP addresses.
Okay. Well, normally, if an IP address of a box changes, as long as the channel, the cluster receiver specifically, is recycled, stopped and restarted, that definition for that queue manager will get republished into the cluster. Now, if you've actually deleted and recreated the queue manager, then there might be some cleanup to actually do in terms of removing the old queue manager's IDs from the configuration once the full repositories are up and talking to each other okay. But if you moved everything all at once and recreated it all, then it should have worked.
What I found was that the cluster only knew about the old IP addresses, and I didn't have any way really to tell it to know about the new ones. It wanted to communicate about the new addresses, but it couldn't because everything in the repositories was pointing to the old addresses. That's why I ended up deleting the repositories.
Okay. It might have been a simple question of making sure that all the cluster receivers were recycled so that they could publish the new IP address information attached to them up to the full repositories so that it could actually replace the definition that it had.
Okay, then that's what I could have done, and thank you for that.
Okay.
Ramaduri, your line is open.
Yeah, hi. I have a quick question about the, shutting down the queue manager. We run the queue managers on a Red Hat cluster server, which is basically in a high availability mode. So there is a possibility that if one of the hosts is down, the queue manager automatically will be started on a different host. We don't have any kind of a control to really shut the queue manager in, from the cluster perspective. I heard that in the presentation, somebody stating that you should not shut down the cluster queue managers in the cluster. Can you explain me why the queue manager cannot be shut down?
I'm not sure I understand. When you said you heard someone say don't shut down the queue managers in the cluster, was that in regards to high availability, or was that when...
No, you know, one of the slides you said that one of the things that you should not abruptly shut down the queue manager in the cluster.
Well, okay. I guess we need to elaborate on your question. Are you saying it's being shut down for a short period or for maintenance? Are you suspending it from the cluster? You can suspend it from the cluster before you shut it down, so that the cluster sends notice out to the rest of the repository partials in full to let it know that that queue manager is temporarily not available if it's going to be a short maintenance period.
But in a high availability mode, when it's being controlled by a cluster, what happens is if the host is down or something like that, the cluster will automatically restart the queue manager on the other host, because of the fact that... it is under control.
Okay, so you have an HA queue manager that is part of your cluster.
Right.
Okay, and so when it's shut down and the other one takes over, are you using a virtual IP or something so that it should be transparent to the cluster that you've failed over?
Yes, there's going to be a virtual IP address. The virtual IP address automatically comes on the new host on which the queue manager is supposed to be running.
Okay.
And there's never going to be any... The queue manager always listens on the... all the connections on the queue manager will be through the virtual IP address.
Okay, so are you saying that you've experienced some problem when it's doing the failover?
No, I'm just asking that we never had any problem because, once in a while, it does happen that, there is a problem with the host. What would happen is the Red Hat cluster server, which is basically shut down the service on the host, which is not working, and automatically start the service on the other host. Basically, what it does is that it'll shut down the queue manager on the host that's malfunctioning, and automatically start the queue manager on the other side with all the resources being allocated on the new host.
Okay, so if the cluster is trying to send to it during the time period of the failover for that short period, the messages may back up on the transmit queue. But when your backup queue manager comes up and is and the link is reestablished through the virtual IP, then the messages that are targeted for that queue manager should be sent to it once it comes back up. So that should be working
Yeah, it is working, but I just wanted to, you know, understand why there was a comment on the one you should not shut down the queue manager without removing it out of the cluster.
I think that they were not, I think that was, okay, that was back when we were talking about stranded messages or things like that, because if you are shutting a queue manager down, then the cluster still thinks that it can send to it, and it's going to back those messages up until it becomes available again. In this case, when you have a high availability failover, the new one should come up in a matter of minutes, and those messages can be delivered. If you have a, you know, if you have a failure, or you shut it down and you don't notify it, or nothing comes back online, then you could have messages trying to route there for a long period of time, and you could have failure of delivery. You know, especially if it's time sensitive information, because
the
cluster won't know that it's gone down.
Most of the time, what we do is if we have to take the queue manager for any kind of a maintenance, we do follow this procedure of moving it out of the cluster and then do the maintenance and bring the queue manager back into the cluster. But, you know, in circumstances where it is being controlled by the Red Hat cluster or the Veritas cluster services, you know.
Yeah, I think that's a different situation in that it's a failover and a HACMP type failover where it's going to come back online and appear to be the same queue manager back online, even though it's maybe running on a different server. It's going to, for all practical purposes, the cluster considers it to be the same. It is the same queue manager. So I think that's different than maybe what was mentioned in the slides about shutting down a queue manager that's not a high availability queue manager.
Okay, one more question. If somebody accidentally defined the queue manager in the as a repository queue manager by setting the attribute repos, is it just sufficient to remove the repos and alter the queue manager?
Well, if you alter that, it's going to change it back to a partial. The only problem, a lot of times with the configuration, is when you manually define a channel to another queue manager, then that is treated as a full repository. So as long as you haven't manually defined any channels, and they were just defined within the cluster automatically, then you shouldn't have to do any further cleanup, because if you demote it back to a partial, it will update itself that way, as long as there's no manual, haven't been any manual channels defined to it.
Okay, thank you very much. That's all I have. Thank you so much.
Our next question is from Martha Mora. Your line is open.
Hi. I asked a question about the system cluster transmit queue, clearing out the messages, and I know the messages that get stuck in there are harmless. The cluster will keep functioning. But our users get very upset if they're seeing messages there. So, you know, if we have a test environment, I'll go there and clear them out. Most of the time they can clear them, or I've even used RSH util. But if we're in production, I noticed the link for the support pack, but that is a version 5.3 support pack. So does this still work in 7.5, or is there a way to, because, I mean, I would imagine those messages in the transmit queue have a transmit queue header attached to them. So what do you do with these messages if you want to move them over? How do you identify them? Because the second problem with the cluster transmit queue is just because you see two messages there, there may be other messages that are valid that you don't want to pick up. So how do you really clear them out, even though they're harmless most of the time?
So are you talking about the admin versus application messages? Because I did include a link to a tech note about what you would need to do if it was application data. I think you would have to first browse the cluster transmit queue and see if it is admin data versus application data.
Well, yes, I have. You know, I have gone in there with RFH util, but I mean, if that's the only thing to do, I guess that's just, you know, common sense. But I don't know if that cluster utility that is also referenced, if there's a refresh or will be a refresh for 7.5, or if that's only for 5.3 queue managers.
If you're able to, have you got the support pack number? I can.
It's the only one that says system cluster utility. I had it here, and I've been changing my. But it's referenced. If you drill through the references on the presentation, let me pick it up again. It's old. It's 5.3.
Okay. Well, it allows you to 5.3 is not supported, but maybe I can take it up with developers to see whether there's any thing we can do to support that. But
Hold on, here it is. I just Google. MS0G, Mary Sam 0 George.
So do you say Mary Sam 0 George?
Correct.
Oh, okay, right. I think MSOG, if I remember, is a Java support pack. Yes, that will only support it at 5.3. We don't have any plans to sort of update that, I believe, for version 7.5.
Yeah, maybe you have one for then.
Okay, so I mean, what would be interesting to talk about is the messages that are stranded there and how you believe they have come to be stranded there.
Well, it's just happened a couple of times, and the problem I have is that I know they're harmless and they will eventually clear out. But the problem I have is that there are some people, and there's too many people in our organization, that they say, refresh the cluster, and I'm going like, that's not going to touch those messages. So it would just be nice to say, this is how we can get them. I mean, I can go and I can purge them with, you know, I can purge them, period. But it would be nice to know, like, if we have that in a production situation, it would be good to have a firm process to take care of them.
Okay. Well, application message. Well, the messages will have a transmission header, and messages on that queue will have a correlation ID that matches the name of the channel, in effect. So you could identify which channel they're destined to go down, and then you could get those messages off of the transmit queue.
Right. But how do you know if it's a production environment and you have a lots of messages going through? How do you know you're getting the right one? That's the whole problem.
Are they application messages?
Right.
And is there an alternative queue for those messages to go down or to go to on a different queue manager?
No, not really. I mean, okay. I don't know why they don't just go to the debt letter queue and they sit there for a while.
Well, yeah, that's primarily why I was asking. You said they clear eventually.
Not in production.
Okay. If there's no destination for them, nowhere else for them to go, they are going to sit there.
Maybe we can take that up, you know, at a later time, because it's something that I think is open, and there used to be a support pack, and it would be great if we had a way of identifying, like, which is the older message that's sitting there. Because I'm sure that these messages are older, because the rest of them just fly through the transmit queue. It would be good to be able to pick them out and move them on. But, you know, maybe this is a topic too large or too long for this call.
Yes, perhaps. Yes, if there is somewhere for them to go, then one of the things that you could do is, you know, have shorter retry counts. If the message can't be sent because the channel's in retrying mode, for example, then when the retry counts are exhausted, the queue manager will look at those messages for a what deems to be a failing channel, and it will try and put them to an alternative destination. So if you do have long, short and long retry counts and intervals, then those messages will sit there for longer. If you have shorter retry counts and retry intervals, then we can move them on sooner for you. That's providing there's an alternative destination.
Okay.
Our next question is from Richard Serling. Your line is open.
Okay, thank you. I have a similar question that was brought up earlier about the imbalancing that can take place. We have an internal client who is saying 90% are going to one set of queue managers and 10% going to another set of queue managers. In our production environment, we have 26 queue managers in the cluster, and we have four pairs of co-located queue managers. One pair is in, let's say, Tennessee, and one pair is in Utah that are getting the imbalance. Now, I'm using the AMQ RFTM utility or command to display the destination sequence factors, and because we had one instance where the destination sequence factors were off between two co-located queue managers in the cluster, and we saw some imbalancing there. But now the pair of queue managers in a cluster in, let's say, Tennessee has this very similar destination sequence factor, while the pair in Utah in the cluster queue managers there, their destination sequence factor is very close to each other there too, but they're different between the two. So the Tennessee queue managers have destination sequence factors, let's say, in the millions, and the Tennessee queue managers have the destination sequence factors in the tens of thousands. Now, with that, now I know that I think destination sequence factor is a part of the algorithm that clustering uses for balancing. Now, would that those two sets of queue managers being that off with the destination sequence factor affect their load balancing?
Hi, this is Andy. Yes, if an application is putting a message and between those two pairs of queue managers, that, you know, there sounds like there's four instances of a particular queue that they
Correct.
Messages can go to.
Correct.
With all other workload management attributes being equal, then there will need to be some kind of catch up between the two pairs in terms of where the messages get routed. However, the destination sequence factor really only comes into play if the weighting has been altered. So if that is at its default value for all four instances, then I would understand why you're seeing what you're seeing. However, the destination sequence factors can be reset by altering one of the attributes that the workload management routine relies on. Okay, so making a significant change to one of the cluster receivers across those pairs. I guess what we do need to sort of be sure of, though, is that there aren't multiple applications that might be using the same set of channels to route their messages for different application queues, because that is something that can sort of skew the distribution of messages between the queue managers that they're being sent to.
Okay, right. Okay, good. Yeah, so there could be other interference caused by other transmissions.
Yes, and one way to maybe remove that skew might, you know, some customers do this, others don't. It really depends on what you're trying to do. But, for example, one thing that customers can do is they can have a particular application that's using a particular set of queues hosted in one cluster, and an application that's relying on a different set of queues hosted in a separately different in a different cluster. Now, while you might want to have the same channel being used to share those queue managers in or across two clusters, you could equally have a separate cluster receiver and cluster sender pair for each cluster, and in that way, you will guarantee that each application gets its own set of destination sequence factor attributes that the put will actually rely on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, these are all in the same cluster. So, yeah, okay. But that one part there about potential other interference through other traffic causing the imbalance of the destination sequence factor values is a good point too.
That
it's not just isolated to those four queues, like you were saying, that are distributed there. Could be other ones going elsewhere. Okay, thank you.
Our next question is from Ping Meng. Your line is open.
Hi. Yeah, thank you. Yeah, so my question is, I also checked on the line, that is, we're running an issue with a new queue manager cannot join the cluster, and we're running MQ70110 on Solaris 10. And it seems the repository manager process keeps dying, and the messages, we tried to recycle the queue manager, but after a while, like a couple of hours, and the process died again, and we're seeing the messages in the system cluster command queue cannot be processed. And the error log is showing that the AMQ 5008 errors, and what could cause this? Is it a resource issue that the system is running low, or what could cause this, and what should be the next actions for this?
Hello, Ravi. This is Andy. I did put a post in the chat. It sounds like something that we would probably need to investigate via a PMR. We can't sort of tell what the reason is for the RRMFA process abending. So, if you couldn't collect any FDCs that might have been generated and send in the error logs, or actually run the run MQRAS information when the PMR gets opened, then we can sort of have a look at what might be causing that and investigate it. We don't naturally expect the process to die, but we would need to have a closer look at what's going on there.
Yeah, I would say if you suspect that it could be a resource issue, could you please run the mqconfig or check your resources on the Linux server first?
So that's what I can try. Okay. And I also checked the FDC file. There is FDC generated, but it's not related with the repository manager process. It's for other, like, unrelated FDCs. Run QSC the processes. So I don't think there is any FDCs generated for this. So that's the only error we saw in the MQ error log. It just happened recently.
Okay, then I think it would be good to open a PMR for that, but go ahead and run the mqconfig and send the FDC when you do that.
Okay, I will do that. Thank you.
Fair enough for the questions.
Thank you. We do have a few questions in the group chat. The first one is, aside from the stranded messages, will other messages behind them also be hung pending delivery to other queue managers?
This is Valerie. I'll just answer that one. I think I did answer in the chat to say the short answer to that is no. If they're destined for other queue managers, those will continue to be delivered because they use different channels. But if they are destined for that same queue manager, of course, that you're going to see backup there, but it won't hinder the messages that are being routed to other queue managers within the cluster.
Thank you. And then the next question is about slide 21, asking, is the administration error missed on slide 21?
Yes, I'm sorry about that. It is. The administrative, yes, it should read configuring a mailing fine cluster sender channel to a partial repository. Sorry about that.
Okay, thank you. And then the next question, is there an updated support pack to remove stranded messages from system cluster transmit queue? The one referenced is for MQ version 5.3.
We've covered that one.
Okay. I thought you probably had that. Thank you.
Yep.
And then,
if I may say something, this is Miguel.
Uh-huh.
I believe that a lot of these support packs are provided as is. And so please be careful if you're using support packs like this in your production environment. There are some third-party software, I believe QPASA may be one, or PQEdit, third-party software that provides you the functionality that you're looking for in being able to browse messages and get messages off of the system cluster transmit queue. But please note, once again, that most of these support packs are provided as is and should really not be used in a production environment.
Thanks. And then the next question, what fixed pack level would be exposed to the problem in IV25030?
Yeah, this is Valerie. It would be any level that was prior to what I listed in the slide. So I think it's 70110, 7103, and 7501 have the fix. So anything earlier, such as 7019, 7102, or 75 base would have it. Also, version 6 is not supported, so I didn't mention it, but there is a fix, I think in 6012 maybe, that is available for version 6 as well out there. I just didn't include it because version 6 is not supported anymore. Even if you're on a fairly current fixed pack, for example, if you're on 7018, you still could be subject to run into the problems caused by this APAR.
Okay, thank you. And then the next question is also about slide number 21. Create a new channel to a full repository QManager. Is this done on the QManager with the partial repository?
Yes, that's correct. And that's because that partial repository had a manually defined cluster setting channel to another partial. And you want to change that, and you do it by taking this, implementing the steps that were in that slide.
Okay, thank you. And then the next question, when adding partial repositories to a cluster, what are the considerations for which full repository we should aim the manual cluster sender at? Is it fine to aim all partial repositories, manual cluster senders, to one full repository? The partial will immediately create automatic cluster senders to both fulls anyway. So is it relevant which FR the partial aims its manual cluster sender at?
Hi. Again, we have answered this one in the chat further down. But no, providing the full repositories are communicating with each other successfully when you first go to set up your cluster configuration. It doesn't matter which full repository you nominate to have your partials point their manually defined sender channel at. They will learn about the other full repository, and they will be able to make use of that should the key manager that they originally point their manual sender channel at be down for communication. Hopefully that answers and covers the question.
Okay, thank you. And we have time to answer a few more in the group chat, and then we're going to have to move on. But the next question is, I have two queue manager IDs with the same queue manager showing in full repository. Old queue manager ID still exists even after the QM is taken out of cluster. All I need to do is to reset the cluster to remove the QM ID every time. How do I make the old QM ID with the same QM to go automatically?
Well, if the queue manager was removed from the cluster properly, all that info should be gone within 90 days. But if you ended up with a duplicate QM ID, chances are that it wasn't done. So if you do a reset cluster with that old QM ID for the old queue manager, action force remove QDS, that should take care of it. So after you issue this command, you wouldn't see the old QM ID again in the cluster cache.
Okay, thank you.
Yep.
And then another question that just came to the QA group. It says, are there any best practices or considerations you could post with regards to DR setups? For instance, when bringing up full repositories in DR mode for testing purposes, should we rely slowly on network separation, et cetera?
Yes. At this point in time, we don't have any way to sort of prevent queue managers from accidentally joining clusters if you're trying to do some kind of disaster recovery testing. And that's one particular gotcha where a second instance of a queue manager can be accidentally injected into a production environment. So we don't have anything at this point in time that will allow that separation, apart from, you know, users need to be mindful of the IP addresses and the networks. You know, if you can't separate your networks, then that is a better thing if you're just performing testing.
Okay, thank you. I'd like to thank everyone for your participation in the live Q&A session. At this time, I would like to advance to slide number 28 and pass the presentation over to Miguel for a summary of today's presentation.
Hello, everyone. I hope you have enjoyed this presentation and you have found it useful. I highly recommend that you download the presentation and verify your MQ cluster according to the topics that we've discussed so you may avoid possible future problems. If you're not sure how to correct a cluster-related problem, please do call IBM and open a problem record for assistance. Thank you.
Thank you, Miguel, for the great summary. At this time, we will conclude the Ask the Expert session. We hope the information presented today has been valuable to you. We appreciate your participation and hope you'll join us for future presentations which will be announced on the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange site. Remember, a replay of today's presentation will also be available on this site in the next day or two. Thanks very much for joining us today, and a sincere thank you to our panel of experts for presenting today.